Let's go
Oh,
for it.
there he is.
I'm here.
Hi. Okay. All right. So the first, there is a hand up, and it is area code 541. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Yes, Celinda. How are you?
We're well, young lady. How are you?
I'm good. And I was listening to the previous show with Dr. Tim and David Gruder and Laurie Morris. And while they were talking about the light, I remember how in many spiritual traditions, they don't just talk about the light, they can talk about the sound. Michael, the only thing I've made a connection with is the sound is the great harmony of the universe, but I don't know how it relates to light. And I was wondering if you, Michael, and Eugenie have any insights about that I can consider about what the sound would mean and why in these traditions that they talk about the light and sound.
Well, my take would be that, you know, we have the ability to convert. I don't know if you were on the show yesterday, but I was talking about the experience I had when I was on a massage table yesterday and was listening to a piece of music and started to sing to it and had a whole new level of appreciation for and the sensation of the impact produced by my generating sound on my body. And so I think that it takes a conscious organism, you and I, to speak things into creation. And so that would be my take. So if Yeshua is correct, you are the light of the world, then you are made of light and you have the ability through this instrument to transmute light into sound. That would be
well,
my
I
take
was
on
also
it. As
thinking,
far as what the mystery schools are teaching, you know, there are all kinds of theories and such. I'm just not familiar with them.
Right. And I think each one of us has to come to, in spirit, has to come to the realization of what that means for us. And I agree with you because for me, sound is vibration. And it is the roar of the vibratory experience, and then the light is the bursting forth of the light. Is that also that creative voice or sound or mind that is bursting into this dimension? I suppose I'm just playing now. I'm in my sandbox. I have no way of knowing if that's true or not, but it's very comforting for me. And then the Neil Douglas
just watch. Before you go on to another topic, just watch what you've been speaking and notice that it's in creation now.
Okay.
That's the sound. That's it.
Yes. And I love I love the variant of Neil Douglas Klotz's perception of the, for yours is the power, the glory, and the, I forget what the final sign-off is on the Lord's Prayer, but he talks about the divine principles, the reigning principles, which I would consider belongs to the mind energy, the intention, etc., and the laws. And then he talks about the one song, the universe of creation. And I would say the sound would be, for me, the communal universe of creation, of co-creation. But anyway, those are just thoughts that help me put a framework around it that feels very comforting, and I thank you for your thoughts.
Go for it.
I really thank you for yours, and maybe Jeannie has a thought too that would be fun around this topic.
No, I'm good at the moment. Thank you, though.
Well, thank all of us. And have
a blessed
day.
I had one other thought from Yeshua.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll add one other thought from Yeshua where he talks about, you know, the power of life and death is in our words. And recognizing that, and that's why I say when you were talking about, gee, I'm not sure, I'm just playing in the sandbox. I think you can be very sure. Just look at the words you've spoken in your life and notice where your life has gone. That's how we speak into creation. That's a part and parcel of how we organize this cymatic universe that reflects back to us what we hold to. So between paying attention to our perceptions, our words, and making sure that they're in alignment with where we really want our creative process to go becomes key.
Sweet.
In terms of how it impacts our own physiology and the world around us.
Sweet.
As somebody's mother used to say, make your words sweet because one day you may have to eat them.
Oh, I love that one.
Yep.
Well, I remember what Thoreau said, too, about, you've built your castles in the sky, now put foundations under them.
Yep.
Wasn't that Thoreau?
That's what it takes. Yep, it was.
Well, thank you.
But they're right. Our castles in the sky are right where they're designed to be. Now, can you
right.
build the structure underneath? And you'll build that structure underneath by speaking it into creation. Language precedes behavior. Aside from, karma-based memories, guidance, which is also based in language, but if we're going to create something new, language will perceive the behaviors that will produce the new.
Oh, I love that one. Thank you for offering that.
Yep. One of the reasons why with Aria. Say it again.
It's the collective brain, co-creating
process.
All,
it's all there for. It's there for all of us.
Yep. Blessing.
And one of the reasons why we keep.
About Aria.
Yeah, I was starting to say that one of the things we are constantly affirming for Aria is her imaginative faculty, where kids go into school and they tend to lose it statistically. It's just gone. And we are continuously explaining to her, languaging to her, that this is her faculty, her way of bringing into the creation what she's about creating, who she is. And that image, the ability to image in and then to put into language is part and parcel of the process. And sometimes we get guidance or images that we can't even put into words, as Yeshua talked about. So many things I would say to you, but you can't hear them. You got no brain cells. And so part of it is developing the brain cells, building the brain cells to bring the new in and to teach your own mind to understand about it.
And then your mind can be the servant it was meant to be.
Say that again. I couldn't hear the first part of it.
And then our minds can be the servants that they are meant to be.
Exactly. Exactly. The vehicle. Yay. Joining you at
Yay.
Again, lady.
All right. Go for it, all of you.
All right. You have a blessed one.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We do, and I believe that it might be Harry or her partner. I'm not sure which. It's a really long phone number. Hi, welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hey there. Welcome, young man.
This is Maddox.
Delight to hear from you. Okay. That young lady told me you were going to be calling in.
Excellent. I'm glad to be here. I just got off another meeting. I just got on, and here I am speaking with you. So this is divine right timing.
Sweet. Sweet. So what's on your mind today? Your voice is just a little bit fuzzy. If you can get close to the microphone, it might help.
How about this?
A little better, yes.
I can always put on headphones. Give me 2 seconds to grab my headphones.
Okay.
Situation. I can't find the headphones.
Okay.
Daughter, 18 years old, lives with mama, has not wanted to speak with me for over 10 years.
Ouch.
And my journey has taken me from guilt and shame to men's work where I've been able to forgive that and release the guilt and shame, and am in a state of wishing to make amends and make reconnection. And so I'm in the process with my men's circle brothers are assisting me to figure out how to, in a healthy way, reach out to both mama and daughter. And I realize that the first connection is with mama. And one thing that came up in that meeting with the men last night was I needed to forgive myself. And that touched some deep chords that bring me shame, bring up guilt. And when I was sharing with my beloved, suggesting reaching out to you today, and here I am. I don't know if that's enough background for you.
Great starting point. So let's see if we can offer some support and clarification. First of all, as you've probably heard me say before on the show, never forgive anybody for anything. And I would clarify that with never even attempt to forgive yourself for anything, because that's an impossibility. However, when you recognize that the word forgive is 1,000 miles away from our culture's idea of forgiveness, where I'm going to let you off the hook, or you're going to let me off the hook, or I'm going to let myself off the hook. Rather than that, if you go back into the Aramaic language, wherever we hear the directive from the Greek translations, or I should say the Greek interpretations, because they're not translations, whenever we hear that, whenever, let's say, for instance, Yeshua purportedly says, forgive your brother, he never said that. There are two words that are missing each time that kind of a command or that kind of a suggestion comes out of his mouth. And that is, rather than saying, forgive your brother or forgive yourself, what we would hear him saying in Aramaic would be, forgive as to your brother. Forgive as to yourself. So let's say, Merrick, you're my brother, and you do something that brings up all kinds of rage in me. And, of course, if I'm in the standard mindset of the world, look at that, you've enraged me, you've caused me so much pain and so much trauma, but it's okay, I'll forgive you. Or, you know, gee, I have rage, so I'll forgive myself. But if I do those two acts, what the Greeks suggested, I've done nothing to impact the fact that in my physiology there's rage. So when we hear Yeshua's instruction properly, what Yeshua would be saying is, if we expanded it out, Michael, you interacted with Merrick and he brought up rage in you. And what I will suggest that you do, if you want to heal your rage, is you forgive as to what Merrick brought up in you. So I don't apply forgiveness to you. I don't apply forgiveness to myself. I apply forgiveness to my rage. And by so doing, I remove rage from my physiology. So it would be forgive as to your guilt. That it's about, and, you know, how many generations do you suppose each of us have got in our bloodline of people who have unresolved guilt and trauma and pain around their children? Like, monstrous. So the forgiveness process would be one where, and you could impact that guilt that you're realizing is there in many ways in terms of removing it. And that might include doing worksheets on your former, because probably the relationship and the trauma and whatever, without knowing anything that went down, it usually isn't fun, especially for the kids around. So it might be doing some forgiveness work around your former, doing those worksheets.
Yes.
It might be doing some forgiveness worksheets around your daughter and what happened with her. It might be doing forgiveness worksheets on yourself. So you look at, so I'm thinking about reconnecting with my daughter, and all of a sudden guilt comes up in me. So what would that worksheet look like? Well, if I did the worksheet on myself, because I'm the one who's feeling the guilt, it would look like, you know, I, Michael, who am love, am feeling guilt. The thought behind my guilt is that I should have been a better father and stayed in touch with her. And the goal in that regard would be exactly that, that, you know, I should have stayed in touch with my daughter and been a better father. That they'd actually be two different worksheets. So then going down to the core forgiveness step, you know, I set my love in my mind. I do the core forgiveness step, and I cancel my need to have been a better father. I'm going to breathe and be with what moves in me, having presence, love in step four of the worksheet, canceling the goal to be a better father. Let whatever's in my mind about being a good father, which might be, you know, something that happened 10 generations ago when, you know, the father of this child that fell in the river and he was in care of her and she drowned and it was his fault. That might be the guilt that ultimately the actual underlying energy that you want to open your physiology and open your genes to access and expose to the presence of love so it is dissolved from you. And that would be the forgiveness. That would be what would be forgiven. The worksheet around, I should have stayed in touch with my daughter.
Simply listening and being in the field that you're speaking forth, I literally felt a valve release underneath me and a blockage of energy just flow out of me, and I can feel clearer just by being
joining you in it, my friend. Joining you in it. Breathing with you.
Yeah, like we say in the circle, breathe into that.
Yep.
Breathe into that. Yeah.
So is there any cognitive awareness of what just moved, what that valve opening was about?
Say again? Was that a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any cognitive awareness of what the energy was. Were there any images or messages that came with that valve opening and that physiological release you felt?
It felt old, as in previous to great-grandpa, because I don't know those men now, but it felt like it was previous to that. And it was a lightening, a clearing of my mind and energy. The colors are even brighter right now.
Hmm. Sweet. That's forgiveness. So, you know, if you'd hung around for eternity and said, I forgive myself for my guilt, I forgive myself for my guilt, I forgive, it wouldn't have moved that. But, and you know, the genius of this man, Yahshua, to have come up with perception, whatever it is always driven by a goal. And the way you access what's underneath the surface that's hidden that you don't normally see, you're able to access by canceling the goal. And then that perception, that construct of the mind that's based in this case in guilt, by canceling the goal, it collapses into its own footprint. You know, like we saw the 9/11 towers collapse into their own footprint. And that's what gives us access to the underlying energy, however many generations back it was, however old it was, or however fresh it was. It's what gives us access to the unconscious part of what the surface mind only shows us the tip of.
It's like just barely a resonance of. And it took me a long time to understand. Because at first I was confused. What do you mean cancel the goal? It's a good goal. I want to be a good father. However, studying your material, I've learned that that was a program, unhealthy program at that, that I was building that goal from. And by canceling the goal, it allows me to go into the subconscious where the root of it is, because it's always within me. It's never about the other person.
Exactly. And the reason for canceling a goal, I mean, most goals that people we would suggest cancel are, as you say, wonderful goals. The reason to cancel a goal is whenever I put it in my mind, if it accesses or resonates some sort of hostility or fear, I cancel it not because I don't want it or there's anything wrong with the goal. I cancel because I recognize that it activates or resonates some form of hostility or fear in me that I need to get rid of. And forgiveness is about getting rid of that underlying hostility or fear, where It is an indicator of corrupt data, and it's about I cancel the goal so that I get to access the corrupt data and get rid of it, and then go back and restore the goal to be a great father. And if you're totally consistent, you breathe, and every part of your physiology is in delight and joy about being a great father, then you probably just opened a whole energy window that is going to make you a lot more attractive and appealing to your daughter to let go of whatever's gone on for her and be able to tap into dad.
I see. Because then I'm accessing my authentic self, and I'm coming from truly who I am, and not some programming that I took off from my family or came from my genetics.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you tapped into that it was perhaps something from a prior generation. So on an energetic level, if there's something in there about daughters from a prior generation, then energetically you're always communicating to your daughter, you know, let's say just to make something up, three generations ago, this daughter was hurt by her father, and he came to the conclusion that he was just, you know, a terrible person and would always hurt his offspring. If that's the vibration that's left in my genes, and I have a daughter, then until I access and forgive that energetic pattern, on an unconscious level, I'm always communicating to her,
right,
I'm here to hurt you. Until I forgive that vibration in me, that's a communication that, and of course she may never become aware of it. She just goes, ew, dad, ew. But when you let that one go, when, you know, again, whatever the specifics of it are, that communication is no longer there, and it opens the gate for, oh, of course we're going to get back together. And then, you know, then the next one would be to look at, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you, and it sparked another situation with oldest daughter, where she had stopped speaking to me as well. But she, when she went to a metaphysics college, went to an Akashic department, and her question was, "What's up with Dad? Why do I not want to talk to Dad?" And her Akashic reading was that she had a lifetime as a poor brown-skinned child with her brother in the streets somewhere, and Dad was a drunk, and she ended up walking off and leaving, you know, leaving the planet into the ocean, and so she came away with that anger against that Dad. So when she could remove that from herself, then she could approach me and say, "This wasn't even about you; it was about him." And can we speak as equals? And since then, she and I have been very close. So you brought that back up. So there is more in my genes that's also reverberating to younger daughter.
Right. So the next step would be to look at, you know, again, as I suggested earlier, and this may or may not be a factor, but maybe, you know, a should that you had on yourself. I should have kept in better contact with my daughter. So the forgiveness in that arena would look like, so I, Merrick, who am love, feeling guilt again, I should have kept in touch with my daughter. What's the goal? The goal is to always be in touch with my daughter. What's the forgiveness process look like? I presence love in my mind. I breathe. I cancel the goal to be there and communicate with my daughter. Collapses whatever that construct is about, and now I get to access the unconscious dynamics, maybe again, way down in my genes, history, who knows where, and I'm able to bring that frequency up in the presence of love. And when that frequency comes up in the presence of love, the active presence of love transmutes that energy, and now that piece of data is forgiven, is removed from my structure, and now I'm free of that one. And now I'm no longer communicating based on, you know, whatever, who knows what all the genetics are, what all the as you talked about past lives are, but whatever the energetic frequency was that had her bounce away or send me signals to stay away and me send her signals that I was going to stay away, that energetic pattern comes forward in the presence of love, transmuted, gone, and now a whole new slate is opened up, a whole new possibility is opened. Not only in that regard, but, you know, both of these issues would also open a whole new energetic possibility and pattern within your relationship with your beloved. Because she's a woman.
Yes. And as I'm listening to your energy and feeling your energy, I'm feeling also the fear of communication coming up. And so my predominant feeling now is fear.
Okay. So then, is there a circumstance in which you're sensing that fear? What would that circumstance be?
The circumstance is reaching out via email and receiving what I describe as nasty grams back from Mama. So I have those fears of that nasty gram.
Okay. So then the way forgiveness would be applied there, that would be a worksheet where the object of attention, the worksheet, is Mama. And the goal that you'd want to cancel there would be to get a positive, loving response to your effort to reach out to your daughter. So I cancel my need for a positive, loving response from my former when I reach out to my daughter and breathe and see what energetic pattern there is that loops between you and your former that she would feel so much in pain or trauma, whatever's going on, that she'd actually interfere with your connection with your own daughter and her connection with her father. So it would open a space as you let that energy be processed or forgiven in you. Again, it's not about forgiving her. As you forgive that energy in you, then there's nothing for her to bounce off of and say, I'm going to keep that SOB away. Because it opens a space for her to start to clean up her mind, her part in what all went on for you guys in your relationship.
Yes, I'm breathing.
And as you do that, it wouldn't surprise me if you got an email.
I can feel a depth. Yes, go ahead.
For it. I'll breathe with you.
I'm sensing the depth of it. There's an ancientness in this fear. It goes back beyond dad and grandpa and great grandpa again. I'm sensing a genetic masculine rape and pillage energy. That's what I'm getting.
Yeah. So just breathe into it and allow that to surface. Keeping love present, remembering to stay connected to that state of being. And I'm sure that Carrie is there just holding the space with you. So just let yourself breathe in and let any and all of that come forward. Yeah. I got it. She's like that.
Yes, she is. My beloved.
So breathing with you. So as you process through that one, Eric, it wouldn't surprise me if you got an email from your former saying, hey, you know, it's time to connect with your daughter. I wouldn't be surprised if you got that. Talking historically, having worked with people over the last 50 years with this, I wouldn't be surprised if that email showed up in your inbox today.
Agreed.
Not a prediction,
I
wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
No, you're right. No, you're right. You're right. And I confirm that hit. Because I did write to her 3 weeks ago and did not receive a response. I did see from my tracking in the email that it was opened. So you're right. You're right. You're right. There is a shift today. I can feel the shift. Yes, I feel the weight lightened. I feel the burden lightened. There is movement, yes. This is a very, very powerful love vortex, which is just sucking out of all this ancient stuff right out of me. All I had to do was release it.
Breathing with you, and you know there's a wonderful principle expressed in the Course in Miracles that says, when you are healed, you are never healed alone. And that as you do your work, millions yet unborn will be touched by the work you do. So it's a big issue on the planet, an important one to work through. Thanks for being willing.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for holding the vortex open for the planet, for those that can touch it and reach it and release the stuff. I just realized that I'm the one holding on to this stuff, even unconsciously. And
yes.
Once I release it, poof, that vortex just sucks it right out of me.
And you notice how when we're holding that stuff and we're in terror and trauma about, oh, I don't ever want to deal with that, somebody in resonance with that shows up and does a behavior, fires those brain cells, that unresolved energy in us. And what most people do, because they live in denial and they're members of the one world universal religion of blame, is that energy moving in them, then they use that to build their perceptual construct of that other person. And that person shows up in their mind with their problem attached, and they swear it must be that other person's problem, because look at this, I can see it in my mind. And it's all a fraud. And that is, again, driven by goals that needs to be collapsed so that the underlying energy can be accessed, rather than indirectly by projecting it into our brain's image of someone else, being able to access that energy directly. And that's what frees us from it. And yet that's what most people are terrified of, because they weren't safe to feel that energy in its origins and to work through it.
And I get it. It's fearful. It can be big. And I certainly
monsters.
Get it.
Yeah, it's the stuff that murder and rape and pillage is made of. That's exactly what it is.
Ah.
And to be able to stand in a connected space as a space of love, to be able to embrace that in ourselves and each other, to process through it. You know, and in this work, I define processing as the ability to hold love, conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. And the beauty of it is, as if I just breathe in it and hold that space, the process is taken care of. You know, it happens. It's not even something I, in any active way, do. I set the stage for it. You know, in the ancient teachings, they said only God can forgive. It literally, truthfully, you and I don't know how to move one iota of energy anywhere. But there's a power in us that does. And that power said, you tell me what you want. You want to hold on to this? We will hold on to it forever. You want to let go of it? We'll let go of it. But you and I, with free will, we have to set the stage, or else the energy is just going to be perpetuated generation upon generation. You know, you look at that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, and people think it was about this bright group of people who knew all about astronomy being lost in a 35-square-mile area for 40 years, which, of course, is absolutely ridiculous. You know, they knew the sun came up in the east and set in the west. They just need to start walking, following the sun. They'd been out of the desert within a few days at most. It wasn't about a hot, sandy place. It's just a code word for the unconscious. And most people spend the first 40 or so years of their lives in the unconscious. And if you read that story, what had to happen to get out of the desert? What did they say? They said the old generation had to die off. It didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genare. It means cause. The causes held in the structure from generation upon generation has to be processed out. And then what do you get to do when you leave the desert? You get to go to the promised land. Is that some sort of physical place with dates and palm trees and sunshine? No. It's the land of conscious co-creation. We get to originate an energy, and it plays out the whole, the whole creation is set here for us to bring a frequency into the structure and to bring it into creation. And the only thing that inhibits that is what's in our desert that conflicts with it and blocks it and doesn't allow it expression. So being in that space of willingness to embrace those energetic patterns that inhibit, that restrict, literally, in the creation story where they talked about, you know, go forth and multiply and replenish the face of the earth, most everybody listened to the multiply command, but nobody knew that replenish meant to bring the creation to completion. Each of us has a part to play, something to bring into the creation to bring it to its fullness. That's what we're here for. We're expressions of that fullness with the possibility of a will that goes against that, and that's the hostility and fear-based game, or we get to live in who we're designed to be as love and originate, bring into the creation what's ready to come through from us as unique individuals and expand. You know, the proper translation of the word heaven in Aramaic, or one of them at least, is the kingdom of expansion is within us. And these restrictions have to be processed through in order to open possibility.
Layer by layer.
Step into the promised land.
Baby steps.
Layer by layer, yeah, yeah. Here a little, there a little.
Beautiful. Wow. I feel a great relief. I'm feeling a sense of tired completion coming over me. And so this step. And I am so grateful to you, brother, for
nice.
Being available for, I mean, last night speaking with my beloved, she said, oh, you need to talk to Michael. It's like, yay, tomorrow's Friday. Let's do it. So here we
honored,
are, and I'm
delighted.
So grateful to you for who you are, for your work, for what you're bringing to you, for this beautiful, powerful vortex connected to the divine that can just set these things out as soon as I begin to open it.
Delighted.
I'm awash.
So with what you just said about what you were feeling physiologically, what I'd suggest when we complete this conversation is that maybe Carrie would take you through a still point session, and that will just accelerate and move things through on every level that's opened to bring it to completion.
Ah, beautiful. Okay, she's nodding her head. So we're on.
Sweet. Well, we'll be holding a space for it.
Say again?
I say we'll be holding a space for it.
Thank you. Thank
we'll
you.
Hold the space.
There's other aspects that I'd like to broach with this as well, but I don't think it's not right now. I need to go into that resting place and heal what's moved before I bring the next step up.
Yeah, you just moved a big chunk of
that.
Energy, opened a lot. So that's, I think that's wisdom, is to just be in that and have Carrie just, I don't know, Carrie, do you have the energy field work?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So maybe some energy field work and still point, and we'll be holding the space for both of you. That's awesome.
Thank
Yay!
You.
Thank you, and I'll report in upon any receipt of emails.
Cool. Millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you've done today. Thank you.
Aho. Thank you, brother.
Aho.
Natakwiasin. All right. Bye.
Carrie, do you have any thoughts for us?
Turn her back on.
Wow. On a whole other subject, I heard your podcast the other day on quantum physics and the forgiveness process, and I thought it was really interesting. Can you elucidate on that for a minute, or I don't want to, you know. Basically, with what Monica just went through, I think it's really awesome. So I'm just standing here holding space for that. But, I'm excited, actually, to talk to you about that. I'd like to go listen to the whole thing. I only listened to part of it, and maybe just call you one of these days and have a discussion about it. Quantum physics in the ancient Aramaic.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, as appropriate, we'll hold the space, and when we recognize that there is only energy, and that we were given the power of creators to bring that energy into expression, it's when they talk about metaphysics, there is no metaphysics; it's all physics. We just put it into a material world, so we thought, well, there must be something beyond the material, but it's all energy. And so bringing the master energy in of the presence of our human lives, of being, and then originating those energies that are in harmony with our highest and best means we're right there on the cutting edge of creation.
Yes, very much so. Agreed. Yes, great to hear your voice and great to hear your process. I always learn. I always grow. I always expand my being and my, my awareness of the process, just how important it is to be, delving in. And sometimes when it's our own stuff, it's harder to see, so it's always nice to have some help.
Nothing like a little help from our friends.
That's right.
And yes, we can expand that circle for and with each other. And it's what it's all about, Elfie.
Yeah. I feel just like I want to be, a stronger participant in helping spread this way of living to those who are ready to hear.
Well, there's this old saying that says you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah.
But you can make him thirsty. You can make them thirsty.
Yeah.
And you make them thirsty
good.
By demonstrating that it can be done. I think one of the reasons why people go, oh, that'll never work for me, oh, I can't do this, is they literally have tried everything that they could find, and nothing works. So they come to the conclusion, well, nothing must work because I've tried everything. But they haven't tried the actual work of Yeshua yet. And that's where the whole alchemy happens.
Right. It's amazing. It's so powerful.
And when he speaks about, as a physicist, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He's not, of course, talking about bread, but that each one of us that forgives as to whatever hostility or fear we hold within our structures from whatever time frame within our family systems, past, present, and perhaps future, because we're not even sure there is such a thing as past and future, whatever that all looks like.
Right.
We don't need to figure it out. But when we create the space to open and process through those patterns, then I think we'll start to see what human life is really about and what it's really for when we hit that critical mass point and 7.5 billion people wake up and go, oh, I just remembered, I am the presence of love. Oh, you enemy, you are the presence of love. Why don't we get about our Father's business? Why don't we get about what we were originally designed for? And the whole game changes at that point, and that's going to be a pretty exciting time, I think. And I think we're getting close. I think we're close to critical mass.
Yes. I think we're definitely moving that direction and getting close. Yes, I agree. It's a great wake-up time.
For sure.
I always find you're so articulate, of course, after 30 or 40 years of speaking this, Michael. It's just incredible. And, sometimes I'll have somebody say to me, oh, yeah, I know what forgiveness is. I do it all the time. And then, it opens up the door because what most people think they have forgiveness, but they don't know what it is, really. So it is an art to communicate it and to share it in a way that people can utilize it and can see their lives change.
Well, it can be a challenge, too. I mean, I run into people all the time and say, oh, yeah, I forgive every day. And
right.
People, it can bring up a great deal of offense when you say, well, how do you forgive? And they go, well, you just forgive. Well, And it's like, no, I don't know. How do you do it? You tell me you do it all the time. How do you do it? And I've never had anybody, and I've been doing the Aramaic forgiveness work. It's about 44, 45 years, something in that range. I have never had one person that can articulate how you forgive or how they forgive. Well, you just forgive. It's like, no, no, there is a technology that works. And a lot of people become very agitated at being questioned. Well, you know, who do you think you are? It's like, I don't think I'm anybody, but there's a technology. And if you're telling me you're doing it, but you don't know how it works, then you're not doing it. Here it is. Take it, you know, give it a shot.
Right.
But it can be a challenge to get when somebody believes they know what something is, and the truth is they don't have a clue, to get them to shift into an open space. You know, I love one of the things Dr. Tim says oftentimes for years on the show. He said, you know, when I approach something, I approach it as though I know nothing about it, and I'm here to learn about it. And that's what opens a space for new understanding and new growth. So that's sometimes a challenge to get people to that place.
Yeah.
And so joining you in how we expand it, you know, to literally, you know, the commitment is every, until this technology becomes available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's what we're here to do.
Yes, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate your thousands of hours of radio shows and just the workshops and everything that you guys have done over the years to put this out there.
Oh, my mind harkens back, Gary, to Michigan, and having that back porch that was our refrigerator for that intensive.
Yeah.
That was a great event. That was fun.
Yeah.
Well, for those who don't know what I'm referring to.
I don't know if I remember exactly. The thing I remember the most is coming to Heartland and doing a workshop there, and that was
right.
Really awesome. You guys aren't doing that this summer, are you? Or do you know?
We may do something this summer. I don't know yet. We're toying with whether that's going to fall in place. But what I'm thinking about is the intensive we did at the facility.
Oh, yeah.
Where, remember, we had a back porch and you did the food.
Yes, I do remember that. That was amazing. That was really fun.
That was a pretty awesome, an awesome happening, and the food was great. Thank you for that.
Yes.
It was sweet.
And it's so sweet to have gatherings like that where you actually bring a group of people together. And I think, you know, COVID happening kind of slowed that down for people, but just being on the, those are some of the richest experiences of my life, I think, being in a group setting like that and being able to transform and grow with a group of people, because you're obviously, everybody's activating each other, and, you know, our brain cells
definitely takes it all to a whole new level.
Yeah, it's a whole other level, absolutely.
Sweet. All right, young lady. Well, delighted that we got to chat today.
Awesome. I'll go work with Mudek and do some breath work and some processing, just clearing energy. And thank you so much for holding the space. Just really appreciate it. Okay.
We'll absolutely be doing that. All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have
Ms. Jeannie,
9 minutes, and I got a question by text, and then we also have a question by email. So,
okay, let's go for it.
The one by text said, in a sentence, that's asking a lot of you, Michael.
I'm only allowed one sentence now. Come on now. That's not fair. Okay, I'll cancel. I need for you to be fair.
In a sentence, what do you believe happens to the spirit or the soul after the human being's physical body dies?
Well, I'll breathe on that one. So I'm allowed one sentence for that. If you go back to the creation story, and we've talked about this before, but there are two stories of creation that Moses tells. One is, in the image and likeness of God, he created the male and female, he created them, period. And then, just a couple of sentences later, it says, Moses says, as though he forgets he talked about the creation, he says, and there was no man to till the soil. And then they talk about Adam, Adamos, the red clay. The body-mind unit is formed. the vehicle of expression. And then the two are married, and the Creator breathed into Adamos nafsha. Nafsha was the word that was used to describe the creation of the human being. Adamos was the word that was used to describe the evolution of the so-called physical body. And then Adamos was breathed into. So the Creator breathed into Adam, Adamos, the red clay, nafsha, and nafsha, the created spiritual being, became an incarnated spiritual being. I'm not sure exactly what you're looking for from there, but if clinical death occurs, if nafsha becomes, or pardon me, if Adamos becomes non-functional, then we have nafsha. Nafsha is perhaps conscious and aware, or nafsha is perhaps totally unconscious and relied all their lives on the carbon-based memory system of Adam. And so when Adam dies, they die in terms of awareness or expression. So that would be my input on it. Any thoughts for you on that one, sweetie?
No, that's good. I think, you know, it's the soul, the spirit has always been in existence and always will be, just be in a different form. You know,
yes.
It's not tied to just these flesh and bones. And
yeah, just last year, Jeannie and I.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. When Dad passed,
yeah, go for it.
We actually saw Nafsha, we saw Dad's spirit or soul go somewhere else before his body laid down and died. It was a very powerful thing to experience. But, you know, his eyes got wide. He sat straight up, and he was looking beyond us. He wasn't looking at us. And then he was gone. You know, so there is definitely somewhere that the spirit goes after it leaves the body. There's no doubt about that.
Life is not dependent on a body would be the answer there. And when we put his body in a box in the ground, it was very clear for me that it wasn't him we were putting there. We watched him in a very sweet and sacred way just leave his form behind.
Yeah, the scripture says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And I think Dad was absolutely present elsewhere before he totally left his body. So.
Yep. And in Aramaic, that's what the word death means present elsewhere. Doesn't mean gone, finished, over, kaput. Means present elsewhere. So you've got an email question, sweetie?
Yes. And this is from one who has emailed us before. She calls us brain shifters instead of mind shifters.
Okay.
And says,
cool.
What is your take on the Lord's Supper that's practiced by Christian churches where wine is drunk as a symbol of blood and bread is eaten as a symbol of a broken body? In the NKJV translation, it commends us to, quote, do this in remembrance of me, unquote. In some communities, they even wash each other's feet just before that's done, as the disciples did before the Last Supper. So what do you think the Aramaic, I guess, meaning is to the Lord's Supper?
Well, first off, I would offer that the in Aramaic, the word humility has got nothing to do with groveling the earth like a worm, as the Greeks would tell us. But rather, humility is a mental quality. And remember, this whole thing we're doing with the Enlightenment Society, we want to do the best we can do to transfer an understanding of how to be in this Aramaic mindset. So humility in Aramaic is a mental quality of being able to perceive and cooperate with, be aware of the highest and best in others. So for me, the washing of the feet would be a symbol of that being there in service to each other for our individual and collective highest and best. And I don't think, you know, in my awareness in history, I don't know of anyone who did it quite the way Yeshua did. Kind of reminds me of that song, How Did You Get to Be So Good? Nobody does it better. So, Yeshua offers this space of connectedness, this space of dropping the barriers to the awareness of our unity and our connectedness as love. If we listen to Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. My offering that would be that in Aramaic, this body and blood is an Aramaic idiom. You know, there's a particular passage in the scriptures where a larger group of the disciples than the 12 we're typically aware of were together with Yeshua. And they asked him, what do we do to please the Creator? What do we do to please God? And he tells them, and he tells them in an idiom, which I'll get into in a second, and half of the audience said, too hard a saying. And they turned and they left and they never came back. So, what can I say? Wrinkled was the energy in that situation. That Yeshua even turned to Peter and said, Peter, are you leaving too? So what he said to them is, you must eat my body and drink my blood. Now, obviously, if it was about wine and wafers, nobody would have said too hard a saying. But eat my body and drink my blood is an Aramaic idiom for, you must do the work that I have taught you to do. You must become the space of active love. You must face everything in yourself that keeps you from being in the integrity of the love you are created out of. Eat my body and drink my blood. And those who were in resistance said too hard a saying and left. Now, obviously, it was about wine and wafers. They wouldn't have said too hard a saying. They'd have gone, let's have some wine and a little cracker here. But that wasn't it. It wasn't about... So, to do this work and that he committed to, I'll be the space. I'll be here for you to do that work. Leaves us with a description of a spiritual experience that is probably in the realm where when he spoke to the disciples, he said, there's so many things I would say to you, but you can't hear them yet. So for me, everything I've just said would be kind of the clues that would lead to opening space for each individual's comprehension of what that means. But it's so huge, it's so big, that putting it into our meager little words is kind of futile. So that would be my input on that one. And we're down to the last few seconds. I'm going to say thank you for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.